David Grimm, editor of Science's free online daily news site, Science Now, joins us to talk about the latest science stories. Hi, David.
Hey, Rob.
So what stories do you have for us today?
Well, Rob, we've got stories about how thinking about race impairs our brains, how scientists are using stalagmites to predict earthquakes, and finally, we're going to talk about a few of the Ig Nobel Prizes that were awarded in Boston last week.
Well, let's start with how talking about race impairs our brains. I'm assuming you're talking about race as in ethnic differences?
Exactly. And our brains are very fine-tuned to detect race. In fact, studies have shown that our brains process someone's race in as little as 100 milliseconds. So this is something we pick up on very quickly. But especially among Caucasians or whites in America, discussing race is a bit of a social taboo. Studies have found that whites seem to be less likely to talk about race in a conversation, especially if they're having a conversation with somebody who's not of their race, than people who are of other races.
So how did the researchers test whether thinking about race impaired cognitive function?
Well, first, the researchers wanted to see if they could find evidence to back up this idea that whites are uncomfortable talking about race. And what they did was they had a group of children play a game of Guess Who. And if you're not familiar with this game, this is a popular children's game where kids will lay out a bunch of cards on a table. And each card has a picture of a person, and all the cards are face up. And maybe there's a picture of a fat person or a thin person or a white person and girls and boys. So all different genders and body types and races. And one kid mentally selects a card on the table, and the other kid has to guess what card the other kid is thinking about. And they can only ask yes or no questions.
So things like, does the person you're thinking about have blonde hair?
Exactly.
Okay.
And so the researchers had a group of 100 kids play this game. And they broke the kids into two groups, a group of about 58 and 9-year-olds and about 50, 10 and 11-year-olds. And the reason they chose this distinction is because other studies have shown that kids tend to internalize social taboos about discussing race at about age 10. And they found that this difference does play out in the Guess Who game. In fact, about 77% of the younger children asked questions about race when trying to figure out what card the other player had selected, whereas only 37% of the older kids asked questions about race.
So it took more questions to figure out which card?
Right. On average, it took an extra question for the kids that weren't asking about race to guess the card.
Did this play out in adults, too? Did they have them play the game Guess Who?
Right. They had adults play the game, too. They had about 100 men and women, and all the adults were white in this case. And they paired half of these volunteers with African-American partners when playing the Guess Who game, and half of the volunteers with white partners. And what they found is that the volunteers that were paired with African-American partners only asked racial questions about 66% of the time, versus those that were paired with white partners asked racial questions close to 90% of the time. So again, this is further evidence that Caucasians are reluctant to discuss race in a social setting. But next, the researchers wanted to get to the central crux of the study, which was, how does thinking about race, or maybe avoiding thinking about race, affect our cognitive abilities?
Other than just in the game Guess Who, where it took more questions or people were uncomfortable in getting to the answers.
Exactly. And in this final set of experiments, the researchers took adults who had avoided mentioning race in the Guess Who game and gave them a color matching test. And this is a standard test psychologists use to determine how quickly the brain processes information. And what the researchers found was that the subjects that had avoided talking about race performed a lot worse on this test than the subjects that did talk about race. And the researchers speculate that trying to come up with alternative ways to identify people, in other words, if you're avoiding talking about race and you're trying to guess at a card and you're sort of twisting your mind in a pretzel to come up with a bunch of different adjectives to describe somebody besides race, you're sort of blocking your mind up and maybe even draining yourself of valuable cognitive resources.
So I guess the overall idea is think about the situation first before you take steps to avoid talking about race.
Right. Researchers say the findings show that even though whites think they're doing something positive by avoiding talking about race, it might actually be counterproductive in some situations.
Let's turn now to our next story about using stalagmites to predict earthquakes. G stands for ground, right? These are the ones that are in caves that grow up from the bottom?
Exactly. These are mineral formations that grow up from the bottom of the ground. And this study has to do with an interesting discovery made by a team of researchers in a series of limestone caves in southwest Illinois. They found areas where the stalagmites were all about the same size. And that's kind of unusual because stalagmites form when water that contains calcium carbonate drips from the ceiling of the cave. It drips onto the ground, and over time the water evaporates, but the calcium carbonate remains and builds up over time to create these stalagmites. But you would expect, you know, in different parts of the cave, you would have different sizes of stalagmites. But they found two areas where there were two different sizes of stalagmites, and there were a lot of one size and there was a lot of the other size.
Starting off at the same time because of some earth-shaking event that caused water to seep into the cave.
Exactly. That's what they hypothesized. Maybe there was an earthquake. And the reason, as you said, is because an earthquake might cause cracks in the ceilings of the cave that would cause water to drip down. And what they did was they measured the age of these stalagmites. You can do this a bit like you do with tree rings. Because this water drips down in annual cycles, it forms layers, kind of like tree rings, which scientists can use to date them. They also looked at isotopes of uranium and thorium, which can also be used for dating.
Southwestern Illinois, this is the New Madrid fault area?
Right. And when doing this dating, the researchers actually tied one group of these stalagmites to the New Madrid quakes, which occurred about 200 years ago, and the other group to another quake that occurred about 90 years ago. So there was a good correlation between when these earthquakes happen and when these stalagmites first form.
How will that help out in prediction?
Well, the idea is if you can find a pattern in when these stalagmites form, you might be able to predict future quakes. In other words, if you go into a cave and you find that the stalagmites are forming every 50 years and the last ones formed about 50 years ago, then you might be able to predict, hey, this region is due for a quake any day now. So it's sort of an idea of looking back to predict the future.
Another tool in the toolbox.
Exactly.
Well, finally, we get to the Ig Nobels. Now, we've all been hearing about the Nobel Prizes this week, but give us a reminder, what are the Ig Nobels?
Well, the Ig Nobels are sort of a humorous version of the Nobels, and it's real research that's being awarded, but it's often research that would strike people as kind of silly. As the Ig Nobel Committee bills it, this is research that first makes you laugh and then makes you think.
So what were some of the award winners this year?
Well, one of the awards is a story we actually talked about on the podcast last year, and it was actually one of our favorite 10 stories from last year. And this has to do with how lap dancers who are ovulating earn higher tips than lap dancers that aren't ovulating.
Sure, I remember that one. They correlated the frequency and the amount of tips to the woman's menstrual cycle.
Right. And this won the Ig Nobel Economics Prize. Now, the Ig Nobel Chemistry Prize went to another sort of sexually themed research idea, which was actually two competing papers from about 20 years ago. One paper that showed, first, that Coca-Cola is an effective spermicide. And this was in 1985. But a paper came out a couple of years later showing that Coca-Cola wasn't a very effective spermicide.
Have the Ig Nobel Award Committee ever given an award to people for coming up with the opposite result?
No, this was a first for the Ig Nobels. And there were eight other prizes also awarded in Boston last week, including modifying the sound of potato chips to make them sound crisper and an attempt to give dignity to plants. And you can see a summary of some of these other awards, as well as the two awards I just mentioned, on the site.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for Science Now?
Well, Rob, we're looking into a story about how ovulation in women is reflected in the pitch of their voices. How patients in a minimally conscious state can still feel pain. And finally, how caterpillars pretend to be ants. So be sure to check out the site.
David Grimm is the editor of Science Now, the free online daily news site of science. You can check out the latest science news at sciencenow.sciencemag.org.